racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
The atmosphere at a Ryder Cup, absolutely incredible. I was lucky enough to experience it firsthand, this being my 14th Ryder Cup. All I can say now is welcome to the Grill Room, coming to you from Paris. Hi, I'm Bob Bupka. So proud to be working alongside of Jay Randolph Jr. You probably better know him as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. And Jay, I gotta be honest, we were so worn out after that thrashing that we took from the European team, we decided to stay another day in old Paris.
Well, I hope you and our executive producer, Janet, are getting to enjoy Paris. I know if you were rooting for the Americans, after Friday morning, there wasn't a lot of rooting to do or a lot of excitement. We're going to talk about it and break it down. But, Bob, I guess we should start with the captains.
Yeah, I think we should. And let's listen to what Captain Jim Furyk had to say. Some of it is really confusing to me, but let's give a listen.
We're going to get second-guessed, and we're going to get questioned. I realize as a leader of this team and as a captain, the brunt of it's going to be on my plate, and I accepted that when I took this role. We came over here and played our practice rounds and prepped for this golf course. I'm going to say it over and over and over again. I have every confidence in these 12 players that you could. I think we have a great team. I would take them right back into another Ryder Cup and play it all over again if I could. Obviously, it leaves a sour taste in our mouth to come over here now for 27 years and not be able to win on foreign soil. That's the goal. We want to be successful in this event. We want to grow. We want to get better. But we have to do it here in Europe, and that'll be the goal in 4 years from now.
You know, somewhere I think I read that Custer said that he would take those same troops he had into that battle that he got wiped out at. Well, how can you possibly say that I'll take this team back after watching how they played for 3 days? I mean, to me, that's, you know, if a captain can't stand up and call out his team along with himself, then you're really not being a good captain. Why kid these guys that they did okay?
Yeah, you and I both know Jim Furyk and how nice a man he is. And, you know, he's given golf coach there, and everybody can see through it. A lot of disappointment, a lot of questions are raised. We talked before, Bob, the Ryder Cup, about maybe the captain is given too much credit on victories and too much of the blame on losses. I don't know. I think, you know, as much as I like Jim, there are a lot of questions that people are left with. And, you know, obviously with the score being 17.5 to 10.5 and the domination after the morning session on Friday, you know, the Europeans better. I mean, in the end, you have to admit that. But as you well know, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on Captain Furyk's decisions. And we've already seen with the Patrick Reed situation, which we'll talk about, that clearly things are not all right on the USA front.
You know, Jay, there's one aspect of the USA losing the Ryder Cup over here that I, to be honest with our listeners, it makes me feel good because we all know what Phil Mickelson did at the 2014 at Glen Eagles, threw Tom Watson under the bus. That led to this task force, which then evolved into a committee.
Yep.
And then they go to Hazeltine and win, and the task force committee is getting all this credit. We got the formula now, and then we come over here and have what happened here. I don't think I'll ever be able to forgive Phil Mickelson for calling out Tom Watson like he did.
I think, you know, the fact that this is so different than what these guys are accustomed to, obviously when they're on the other side of the pond, even though I thought the crowds were magnificent, you can talk more to that because you were there. It didn't seem like there was animosity and too bad. And I think once you get to a point like you were on Sunday, after it looked like for a moment the Americans might make it interesting, you know, the last couple hours were just playing out the string. So I don't know what you do. I think you and I both agree that for some reason, and maybe it's because they were beaten for so long, and the guys that then came along, like the Sevies and Faldos and the Woosnams, really changed everything. It just seems like watching from, you know, the sidelines that the Euros care more about it. That still looks like it's evident.
Oh, you're so right about that. I think the smartest thing that I did leading up to the matches on Friday, I was given an opportunity to hold the Ryder Cup trophy, and I had a picture taken holding that trophy because that was my insurance policy in case that trophy was not coming back to the United States, which it certainly is not. But I got to hold it for a little while, and I also still remembered 1993 when I was there, and America did win on foreign soil. So, but anyway, a guy that certainly deserves a lot of credit, Jay. He was a magnificent captain. Here's what Thomas Bjorn had to say.
The whole team has been part of this, and I think it's very easy to sum it up. You know, some play five matches and some play two matches, but they all contribute. And when you sit in this situation at the end of it, you know, I've played in my Ryder Cups, and I don't care how many matches I play in as long as we win. And I think that's what it's all about. And I think we all feel that way now that we got it right this week. We worked as a team, and we knew we were up against very strong opponents, but we went out on the golf course and believed in ourselves and what we stand for as a team. We never, ever looked towards their team about what they were about. We were about us as a team and what we do. And this is the best team room I've ever been in. You know, it was calm, it was determined, it was focused, it was fun. Everything that this Ryder Cup was is what I think the Ryder Cup should be about for a European team.
No, it's pretty amazing, Jay. Thomas Bjorn alluding to the fact that every member of the team recorded at least one point. And then we look at Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Bryson DeChambeau, and combined, they won 0 points. I mean, saying that now, and it's been a few days since it happened, I still don't believe I'm saying it accurately, but that is in the record books.
No question about it. I mean, right off the bat, if you say before the week starts that Tiger and Phil weren't going to get any points, you say save the jet fuel and not even go over. I mean, that statistic that stood out so much is that every single player on that European squad earned a point. Top to bottom, they did it. They did it as teammates. They did it as individuals when they needed to. And you have to give them credit. Like I said, Bob, I'm willing to listen to any suggestions, and I'm sure the next Ryder Cup captain will be too. Somehow we got to find a way to stop this momentum that they've got. And I think they're going to bring that momentum back here with them to Kohler. I think in 2 years at Kohler, they're going to be the favorite because they seem to have the concept down, and the U.S. seems to just, oh, we got to do this thing called the Ryder Cup every couple of years, and we're gonna go over and we're gonna give it our best, but it's probably not gonna be good enough.
Well, let's let our Grow Room listeners in. I'm 99.9% assured that the next Ryder Cup captain is going to be Mr. Wisconsin himself, Steve Stricker, another real good, nice guy as captain. And I'm not so sure those are the qualifications that it takes to be a Ryder Cup captain.
Bob, you know, give me Ray Floyd. Hell, give me Scott Hoke. I mean, give me a guy that you know, is at least going to try and get emotional with these guys. I mean, you know, maybe Jim does, but he's such a soft-spoken guy and a true gentleman. You know, those the old school guys, I mean, they remember playing for cash games when they didn't have enough cash in their pocket to pay if they lost. I need those guys. I don't need that $10 million cushion of Justin Thomas. I mean, it's just fascinating to me, the mindset, how the Europeans are much more ready to go when international competition is afoot.
What about Francisco Molinari? What a year he had. He's the first European to win all five of his matches, and the only time that anybody won a major, and then in the Ryder Cup that year, won five matches. I mean, those are incredible achievements, and Molinari performed like water running off a duck's back.
Absolutely. I mean, from the get-go, whether it didn't matter who he was teamed with, they just, Tommy Fleetwood, looked like they were a match made in heaven. And again, that emotion, that want to, that fact that he knew that, you know, hey, I'm the Open champion, which is the biggest tournament in Europe, and go out and do what he did. It was strong. I mean, I don't know how much you raise a guy's stock with 3 days or raise a guy's stock in this type of format, but my goodness, what a performance by Francesco Molinari.
And I said, and we discussed this, Jay, that it really doesn't take talent to win a Ryder Cup. It takes passion. And boy, did I have a front row seat for the passion of this European team. Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter. I mean, they would lay down their lives to win a Ryder Cup. And I'm not so sure too many Americans would even take a shoe off and get their foot wet to try and win a Ryder Cup. I mean, there's just a difference in philosophy.
Yeah, the reactions. I mean, the intensity. You know, it's evident to anybody that's ever watched tournament golf or played tournament golf that there is something missing. Something has to change. Guy that ended up playing the best of the bunch was a guy that's known for playing well on tough golf courses, and that's Webb Simpson. 2 or 3 years ago, you wouldn't have even dreamed he'd have been on a Ryder Cup team. So it says a lot about the fact that the guy who was your best performer and left out of a couple matches was Webb Simpson. I mean, we're talking about a team that has Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson. I mean, on and on and on. It's really hard to imagine.
Well, you know, back in 1977, Jack Nicklaus himself went to the powers to be because the U.S. was winning on a regular basis. Interest was not at what it should be for a Ryder Cup. He suggested all of Europe be included in the team. I'm thinking maybe Thomas Bjorn, if he wants to issue the ultimate needle, and I don't think he has any interest in doing that, but he should call the PGA of America and say, why don't you guys ask if you can use Canadian players in conjunction with the U.S. players just to make it more competitive?
Hell, just go south of the border, too. We'll take a Mexican if they can do it. We'll take North America. I mean, we know, Bob, that the talent is there. I mean, we see it week to week on the PGA Tour. And that's why I think we're all left with this disappointment, and it's so evident when you watch the demeanors of the two teams and the way they react on the golf course. It just, you know, somebody said to me, well, what about the travel? Well, you know, these guys are accustomed to travel. They had a couple of days to get their bearings. I mean, they're already over there on Monday. They don't tee it up for real until Friday. But there's no excuses. I mean, you got whooped. And if you don't do something different, I think you're going to be in a tough situation at Kohler.
Well, you got a good point there. And as far as travel goes, I certainly want our listeners of the Grill Room to know that when that American team boarded their plane, they did not turn right to go to their seat. They made a sharp left turn and had luxurious accommodations. I swear half of them didn't even know they were flying. I mean, they woke up and they happened to be in Paris. That's just the way it is. Tell you what, I think it's a good time now in the show, Jay. We take take a look at some of the singles, you know, showing up when it counted. Well, Dustin Johnson, the world number one, he certainly didn't play like it. Can you imagine in Sunday singles, he decides he's going to put a new putter in play? I mean, golly, Sunday singles, Ryder Cup, put a new putter in play? Are you kidding me?
Now, there's a guy that, you know, you wonder what motivates him. I mean, he seems to either be at the top of his game or would rather be somewhere on a beach. I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't think he's the kind of guy that gets that excited about this. Another guy who has struggled mightily internationally in singles is Jordan Spieth. And, you know, it was a weird final couple of weeks for Spieth, not making the Tour Championship. And like I said, he looked down the stretch like he was whining on every putt and confused. And then we get the whole thing with one of the few guys on this team, whether you like him or not, and I'm not sure about him, and that's Patrick Reed, but at least Patrick Reed gonna tell you what he's feeling.
We take a look at Tiger and Phil. They got no point. We mentioned that a little earlier. We're going to give a little pass, Jay. Tiger certainly had to be exhausted with that whole comeback situation. But quite frankly, Phil looked like he would have been better suited as a vice captain and a cheerleader, because when he got to tee it up, there was nothing there.
Let me tell you something. If I had the wherewithal, I'd fly Phil and DeChambeau in, and you and I'd practice for a couple of days at Normandy, and we'd give them a run for their money the way they play. Holy smokes! And, you know, DeChambeau's that kind of guy that, you know, he'll probably make the team and go 5-0 in Wisconsin. I mean, he just... You know, the USA has so many guys like a Patrick Reed, like a Phil Mickelson, like a Bryson DeChambeau, truly go to the beat of their own drummer. Whereas it seems like you've got 12 guys that are on the same page every time they tee it up, being the Europeans. They've got to do something with getting this individualism out of this team, and at least for 3 days or for a week, come together. It's so obvious to us all.
As I alluded to at the top of the show, this was my 14th Ryder Cup, and you think it would be.
And that's saying something right there.
You would think that it'd be
strong.
You would think that it'd be safe to say I've seen it all before. Well, when Phil Mickelson put his ball in the water on the par three, that ended any chance of the United States winning. And I had never, ever seen a concession to a match and to the whole Ryder Cup occur on a tee. I mean, that's always reserved for the green when somebody misses a putt. Phil didn't want to play that par three, so he puts it in the water, and it was all over. Just absolutely amazing stuff. What about Bubba Watson? The exterior of Bubba Watson certainly doesn't show me that he's really fired up about it.
Bob, it's almost like some of the guys don't want to be there. I mean, it just is, you know, and I'm sure that they do, and I'm sure they got pride and all that, but it doesn't seem to work. Again, there's another guy. You talk about going to the beat of your own drummer. He's got a whole orchestra that he goes to. You know, all this talk about guys playing practice rounds leading up to it during the tour season and Jared being out there and still competing. I mean, you'd have thought everything was moving in the right direction. You've got, you know, maybe the second greatest player in the world off a win for over 1,500 days, and that momentum coming over the pond, and then he goes over. The planets aligned for the Euros, and they collided for the USA.
I want to float two ideas by you, Jay. After spending some time on the Eiffel Tower, my head cleared a little bit, and I tried to think of possible solutions. And these are polar opposites, but one is, I think, that the 12-point earners should make the team. That would eliminate captain's picks. If you earn your way onto the team, you're on the team. Second would be to have nobody earn their way onto the team. Have the captain have the liberty to pick 12 players that he thinks will help win the Ryder Cup. Either one of those ideas appeal to you, Jay?
If you put a gun to my head, the one I would take would be the first. I don't think anybody wants to have the responsibility of picking every guy. I mean, because then you're, let's just say, 30 guys you could take, as opposed to getting in a situation where you might have 10 guys in a given year where you got to pick four of them. But I don't mind saying, okay, here it is. It's mapped out. You know what you got to do. The top 12 guys play on Steve Stricker's team. Go for it. Here it is. If you want to play, play as much as you can to make the team. If you don't want to play in the Ryder Cup, finish 13th. You know what I mean? It might surprise me if you had a couple of guys that don't want to deal with it.
Well, when we take a closer look at the captain's picks, and boy, does this jump off the page, because I heard a lot of criticism being directed Thomas Bjorn's way when he picked Sergio Garcia, who had a lousy year. He picked, Ian Poulter. He picked Henrik Stenson. Well, here's the numbers in a nutshell, and this is really telling. United States captain's picks earned a grand total of 2 points. 2 points! And they were both by Tony Finau. DeChambeau,
yep.
Woods, Mickelson, Goose Eggs. And Thomas Bjorn's four picks, well, they earned 9 points. What did we lose by? 7 points. So, I mean, if you want to oversimplify it, all we have to do is look at the final tally and see what the difference was in the captain's picks, and you have your answer.
But here is a case in point, Bob. The majority of people who follow and cover the game agreed with the pick. Now, they didn't work out. That's obvious. Bob just gave you the numbers. I mean, the rookie Tony Finau, the only one of the captain's picks to get his name up on a winning side. You know, the Tiger thing is very disappointing. Phil is more than disappointing. It's almost embarrassing. And DeChambeau, like I said, is the kind of guy that, you know, over 3 days, if it's not going right with the way he approaches the game, and is such an individual that, you know, it can backfire. So I understand that you can simplify it and look at those captain's picks, but you and I both know there weren't people screaming, oh, no, Furyk's made mistakes, you know. How could he not take Xander Schauffele, or how could he not take this guy? There wasn't a whole lot of that until after.
Well, I want to make a couple of observations as we're beginning to run out of our allotted time, Jay. From my front row seat, I certainly congratulate Molinari. We mentioned it earlier. He won all five of his matches. He's certainly the man of the year in the 2018 Ryder Cup. Sergio, he certainly played inspired golf. He really is the heart of the team. And Sergio then moved to 25.5 points. Nobody in Ryder Cup history has earned more points than Sergio Garcia. Unbelievable.
How about that?
The legacy that was passed down from Seve Ballesteros to Jose Maria Olazabal, now to Sergio Garcia, who is well on his way of passing that Spanish torch down to John Rahm. The Spanish connection in Ryder Cup is a marvelous one.
You're listening to The Groove, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Audio Boom, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, play The Grill Room Golf Show, Alexa, and you'll be connected. Now, coming up, Bob and I have given our thoughts. The mouth that roars, Alex Maselli from MorningRead.com. We'll find out what he's got to say about the Ryder Cup when we return.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to The Grill Room.
Joining us now on the Vertical Groove Hotline, founder and publisher of Morning Read, I'm sure his edition tomorrow will have a lot to say with what transpired here this week at the Ryder Cup. Another stinging defeat at the hands of the European squad. Alex, that 7 of the last 9 have been won by the Europeans. What's going on?
Well, you know, I think you can take a look at the FedEx Cup, and there might be some direct correlation. I mean, clearly this week, looking at some of these players who have played a lot coming into this, they were spent. And, you know, when you build up to the Tour Championship, and then you're supposed to show up in France the next in 24 hours and get ready for another event, which is the event that the Ryder Cup is, which is bigger than any other event that these guys really participate in from a pressure standpoint. I just think that that has something to do with it.
You know, so much was made that this golf course was going to favor the European side. They knew it a lot better. Not as much in the Sunday singles, but, you know, on Friday and Saturday, so many U.S. players continually were missing the fairway, you know, apparently lack of knowledge.
Well, first of all, I agree that there was a lack of knowledge, and I agree that that was a great equalizer amongst the teams. The other thing is for 2 days, if you know that you got to hit the fairway to get the ball on the green, then you would think you would do anything necessary in your singles matches to do exactly that, and you still saw players not hit proper shots. Now, I can't explain it. I've seen this before, like in some majors where players have never been to the venue, like Marion's a great example, and they just somehow, for some reason, after 3 days of practice rounds and 2 days of competition, they'd still go out there on the weekend and still make the same mistakes they were making before. I don't understand it. I don't understand sometimes why professional golfers think, but there seems to be no question in anybody's mind that watched the Ryder Cup that if you didn't hit the fairways, you were in trouble. Foursomes is basically a recipe for disaster. And so we really never gave Bryson a chance. And I thought he played well against the guy, Alex Noren, in the singles, who actually won the French Open here this year. And it went down to the 18th hole. And even then, Bryson played the 18th hole better than Alex Noren, except for Alex Noren drilled a 40-footer when it didn't matter. So, you know, I think that Phil and Tiger were a huge disappointment. And I don't know what you can say about that. I would never have picked Phil. Tiger, I think, earned his way on from what he did. But at the same time, we all know, and we've talked about it, Tiger, for whatever reason, doesn't like this event. He just doesn't play well in this event. So why bring him if he's not going to play well?
Well, that's a good point. One thing that I do want to ask you, and we're talking to Alex Miceli, the founder and publisher of Morning Read. Maybe we've gotten too many vice captains, because if you surround yourself with vice captains that you literally call your friend and then they suggest something, you're kind of in a dilemma, because you either do what your friend said to do or, you know, you don't do what your friend said to do. And, you know, I don't know, maybe too nice a guy. Is that maybe the word for Jim Furyk?
Well, I don't think that's true. I think you need these vice captains now because there's so many things that are going on, and you need that input from the vice captains, what's going on the golf course. I think what happens, though, is that this idea that everybody should be involved in the decision, this should not be a democracy. You know, there's a reason why there's a captain. He has to make the call. And sometimes having everybody's input is way too much. And I'm not talking vice captains. I'm talking the players. I don't need the players telling me what they think they should do. I mean, I got a pretty good idea. I think the players need to go play. I think the players need to focus on playing. They don't need to be focused on telling me, the captain, what they think we should be doing. They should be playing. And I think that is a huge problem. I mean, Phil Mickelson, maybe it was good for him to be out there and cheering people on Saturday. Personally, I think he should have been on the range working on his game, because his game is the only thing that's going to make the difference, not him out there hooting and hollering, trying to pump up some player out there.
Well, it's not always often that Alex agrees with Bob and I, but I think he's left a little dumbfounded as well, Bob, and I think we're all kind of searching for answers. Play better is always a good way to do it.
I like that formula, Jay. Play better. The rest will take care of itself.
Well, Bob had the chance to talk to one of the new power brokers in the game of golf, the PGA of America CEO, Seth Waugh. Bob sat down with him over the pond in France, and he'd just been on the job for a couple of days, but he was ready to talk to Bob, and we'll hear that when we return on the Grill Room Golf Show, powered by Vertical Groove Golf.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. The facility uses a unique dynamic pricing structure that golfers seem to love. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
I often say that I'm being joined by a special guest, so I'm at a loss for words because my next guest is certainly something far north of special. I like to call him a friend. I've known him for a long time. His name is Seth Waugh. He's now the head of the PGA of America. And Seth, I got to tell you a true story. When I heard that Pete Pavakwa, who held your position prior to you, was leaving, I said, how the heck is the PGA of America going to find anybody that's qualified to do that job? And then all of a sudden I hear the name Seth Waugh, and I said, he might be overqualified to do that job. Congratulations.
Well, you were right. They couldn't, so they settled for me, Bob. No, thanks for the kind words. It's great to see you again. It is nice to have a lot of friends in this game, and you're one of the oldest and best ones. So I appreciate it. It's nice to be with here with you, and thanks for the kind words.
Well, he's not only, when I say he's a friend, I'm proud, because he has a few other friends in the game. Martin Slummers, who heads up the RNA, Fred Ridley, who heads up Augusta, and, of course, a longtime friend, Jay Monahan. And I think that's a key component. You know, the head of the PGA Tour and the head of the PGA of America, those are the two main foundations of golf in the United States. And the closer they can work together, I think the better it is for the sport.
Well, the USGA might think they should be in that list, too. And Mike Davis is certainly a good friend, too. But look, thank you. And one of the real attractive parts about this to me is the opportunity that we have to really work for the game. I'm a big believer that you should leave every room that you enter better when you leave it. And I think the game is in great shape, but also at a really interesting inflection point of what, you know, how do we grow it from here? How do we evolve it from here, really? Because I think grow the game is probably a little overused. And so I am very pleased to have the people that have the seats that you mentioned, whether it's Martin and Jay and Fred and Mike in their seats, because I think we can all no longer sort of compete for turf or compete on relevance, but can actually work towards making the game the greatest it can be. And you know, if you think about other sports, I think some are having existential moments, right? You look at football and all the issues Roger's facing, and in baseball, Rob Manfred's facing, you know, an aging population in terms of viewership, and golf is one that is so worthy, and that's really why I'm so flattered and humbled to take it. It's given so much to my life and so many others. And the chance to kind of make sure that we make it our kids' game as opposed to our parents' game or even our own game is something that I think is hugely important. You know, how do we make golf cool? Or cool again, maybe, is really what it's all about. And so, as you say, one of the really interesting parts of this is the point in time and the people that are in their seats and the opportunity to work together in cooperation to make it a better place.
You know, I've been close friends with many club pros over the years. They are special people. 29,000 strong in the PGA of America, and I see Seth Waugh as somebody that's going to focus a little bit more on the club professionals, the backbone of the PGA of America, and probably, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but knowing you like I do, that you want, one of your missions is going to make it better for that grassroots membership.
No, that's right. And look, we're in Paris, and this is an amazing it's the biggest spectacle in golf, if not in sports, right? And I didn't think anything could get bigger than Hazeltine, but the French have done it, Pascal and his crew, and so it's amazing. But and we've got this huge sort of windfall from the size of the Ryder Cup, the success of the PGA Championship. But the point of our association is to give back to the members. And there's 29,000, as you said. And so the reason I maybe got the game is the fact that I have some, you know, business background and that I know some people in the game. The reason I took the job was really to make those people's lives better, right, the 29,000. I think they're the backbone of the game, the people that touch it from the first ball you hit to the last ball you go home, you know, at night with. It is, you know, and I think it's always been a noble profession, one that we grew up, you know, knowing. I'm sure, you know, I've from the first time I took it seriously with my local club pro, you know, Ed Kelly, to all the other great pros that I've gotten a chance to get to know over the years. You know, it's they do it for passion, but they do it because they thought they could make a great living for them and their family, and that's not as clear as it once was, right? I worry about the person that's out there that's 45 or 50 years old who's got a kid going off to college and lesson T might be down and can't quite figure out how they're going to do it. And so how do we take this huge success that we've had commercially and somehow figure out how to pass that benefit back to our members? And so we'll get through this week and hopefully bring the cup home, and then it's going to be all about the members. You know, member, as far as I'm concerned. And my legacy ought to be judged by, you know, how we benefited them during the time that I'm in my seat.
Seth Waugh, a special guest, and if you doubt at all, he has a flair for excellence. He chooses the 2018 Ryder Cup in Paris to make his debut. I have loved the Ryder Cup for a long time, Seth. Back in the late 90s when Ben Crenshaw was announced captain, I came to him with an idea of writing a book about the Ryder Cup. And he was all for it, and he helped me. And I titled the book Ryder Cup Golf's Greatest Event. And it just seems like year after year, that title, it gets more accurate by the moment. And the thrill for me was, I was in Crown Publishing, you'll get a kick out of this, and they said, who can you get to do the foreword? I said, I don't know. I said, I'm pretty good friends with Jack Nicklaus, so I could ask him. And they almost fell off their chair, thinking I was kidding. But I called Jack. He said, send him the manuscript. He read it. Call back, said he'd be proud. So when the cover came and it said my name and Jack's name, they said, what do you think? I said, I don't care if we sell a copy.
You know, I'll just show it to my mother.
Exactly. But the Ryder Cup certainly has grown. That's going to be an important aspect of your job moving forward. We keep saying every time we hold the competition, it can't get any bigger, but I guess it can.
Yeah, no, well, It's going to be harder now because they've done an amazing job. But you know, first of all, your story is a terrific one, and it's a reflection on you, Bob, as well as the game, right? That we all have these great friends, and everybody will do whatever it is for a friend in the game, right? Whether that's Jack or Ben or whomever, and that's the beauty of it all. In terms of the Ryder Cup, yeah, I mean, it turns out that, you know, tribalism is alive and well, right? It's the beauty behind the Olympics. I think it's why soccer is so powerful in so many ways. And to play for your country and to be, you know, fortunately a lot of the guys that are playing this week really on both sides are friends. And, you know, it's just different, right? And it's different in a way that is pure and I think reminds them of why they love the game as much as, how much they love their countries, right? And so it's just an amazing reflection of everything. And I think there is an arms race, right, to sort of, you know, make it bigger and better every year because the public deserves it. And it's, you know, we hope, and I look, we're coming off of a transcendent moment in golf of last Sunday, right, in terms of Tiger's victory and how that played out and the beauty of the tour of recreating Jones at Jones and Arnie at St. Andrews was amazing. My son, who's a good player and, you know, been around the game a lot, said, I teared up at that moment. And I think that's the power of the game and sort of what we're doing. And now we get to lead into this event, which should make it one of the greatest weeks in the game's history if we have the competition that we think we're going to have. So, you know, 2 years from now, we'll be trying to. I said a joke last night. I said, do you think we can build a palace in Kohler, Wisconsin, in 2 years to try and compete what they've done here? And it'll be great. It'll be different. It'll be local, as every one of these things should be. But we'll do our best to make everyone proud about the next event.
Last thing with Seth Waugh, I was in Tiger's press conference yesterday, and I raised my hand to ask a question. When the mic came to me, I said, Tiger, I don't know if anybody formally in the media has said thank you for what you did on Sunday, but I can tell you, anybody in the golf business, their job was made better by your accomplishments on Sunday. And I really meant that, because he touches all aspects of the game. And you have the challenge now. You're going to be head of the PGA of America with its first female president, Susie Whaley, who, yeah, she's going to be an outstanding president. Of course, she's standing 2 feet away, so I'm saying it kind of loud.
Not only fantastic, but beautiful, too.
There you go. She'll go on record, the prettiest president of the PGA of America ever. Seth Waugh, great to see you. Great success, which I know is coming, and look forward to seeing you down the road.
Bob, thanks for being such a good friend and all you do for the game. It's great to see you. Have fun.
Well, great to hear from Seth Waugh. I think a lot of people, and especially the 27,000-plus golf professionals, Bob, are going to be very interested to see what Seth brings to the table for their organization.
Well, the one compelling thing I got out of that conversation, he assured me his main focus is going to be on the hardworking men and women who are PGA professionals, who are the backbone of the sport of golf. I think the PGA of America is in wonderful hands with Seth Waugh at the helm.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.